Side 2, June 11, 1979, in Victorious, Chris Main interviewing Captain A.C.V. Hall, Regina Rifles. We're back. Just had a nice cup of coffee. Now, as a summary from what we were talking about before, we'll use noon as a cutoff date on June 6th. According to Colonel Stacy, I've been going over my notes, A and B assault companies landed at 8:09 and 8:15. A opposite the strong point, heavy resistance, and B company east of the strong point, less resistance than A company. Mm-hmm. The tanks were given credit for knocking out a 75mm and an 88mm gun by the rivers, and those would be those two guns right at the mouth of the river on the Nan and the Mike sector. Now, according to Stacy's book, C Company, Charlie Company, which is the company that you came in with, is that correct?
Right.
According to them, they landed at 8:35 a.m. on the morning of June 6th. Your recollection, it was earlier.
Okay.
No, that's fine, but I just wanted to, you recall landing there earlier.
Yes.
D landed at 8:55, and as you explained before, the craft, the tide had risen just enough that the mines were covered, and catastrophe, as Colonel Stacy puts it, catastrophe, with only 49 survivors reaching the beach, and that's what kept you busy, I guess, with your prisoners picking up bodies off. I guess they'd be mostly from D Company, is that correct? You were mentioning that you got German prisoners,
no,
too.
There was wounded and casualties from the A and B companies, too, as they'd gone in.
Everybody had casualties. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, C and D company, or C company, I should say, moves inland without difficulty. They leave you, and they're gone. I gather D company is in disarray. Now, did you take over there, or what was it?
No. The second command, can't remember who it was now, but he took over anyway.
He'd be a captain as well, is that correct?
Yeah.
And so, did you have to do anything for D company, is what I guess I'm thinking.
No, they had... Each of their platoon commanders was fully conversant with the whole role of D Company.
So
any one of the platoon commanders could have stepped in and carried on. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you didn't have to help them with supplies and tell them, I guess just supplies. They just kept going.
They kept
what they had and tried to do their own objectives.
Right.
Okay, we hit noon, and I gather Kursul is taken. Is that correct, by noon?
Yeah, it was taken on noon, because I know later in the afternoon I went up into the center of town and went through the old barracks there, and they're still flushing cherries out of hidden corners.
It just that according to my notes, in the afternoon the Reginas push on towards the village of Riviere.
Right.
In the afternoon, that's not very long at all. Now, you went to get your D-Day landing tables, and maybe this will be of great assistance here.
I can get a copy of that if you want.
Oh, that would be absolutely super. I'm sure Dr. Roy could use that. Okay, now, you'll have to explain them
to
me.
It shows the serial number of the landing craft.
Okay.
The landing craft number, for instance, LSI, Landing Ship Infantry, J-14, landed, time of landing, H plus 5 minutes. And that contained four medical section out of battalion headquarters, contained four signalers out of headquarters company, total of eight. And they landed with Baker Company, that's Major D.D. Grosch.
That would be B Company.
Yes.
Then the next one would be...
Major Peters was Able Company. He was in command of the next series, 10-5th. Their LCAs, landing craft assault numbers, were 1050 to 1054.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on landing ship infantry, J-15.
Again, H plus 5. With exactly the same complement.
And then Charlie Company and Captain E. Sime. Now, I should say he is also a co-landing officer, but he landed with the Canadian, Scottish, and the Winnipeg Rifles in case any of our craft came in on the wrong beach and landed.
So he would almost be your deputy, in other words.
Yes. And at that time, he was commander of support company, something like myself.
His
personnel were scattered with all the different companies.
And there's also a Major S. Tubbs.
Major Stu Tubbs, he was commander of C Company.
Of Charlie Company.
Charlie Company.
And this is the one you were with?
I was with him, right.
Okay, and now we're talking serial numbers L...
This was Dog Company.
Or is it, we're talking
1074 to 1079.
We forgot C here. Let's get this in order. We got, is that 1056, 61.
61, 68, and 73.
And the BLSI J16, H plus 20 minutes. And we have four orderly room. There's four men, what, orderly room?
Yeah. Two from the intelligence section of battalion headquarters. One from the
Provost
section. Seven from medical section.
Total of 14. That's battalion headquarters. And from
company headquarters, there was four. Myself, Sergeant Major, Batman Driver, and I forget who the fourth one was now.
So that would be company headquarters staff. Yes. That would be you.
Right.
Company headquarters. You had 10 signalers.
10 signalers. One quartermaster. And 15, a total of 15. Our grand total in that group of 29.
Then D Company.
Now, there were actually more people than that, but they would be they would be from other units, possibly.
I see.
Because we had beach landing people with us from British units.
Now, D Company would be 1074 to 1079 serial numbers,
yeah.
LSI J17, and that would be H plus 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're talking four orderly room. We're talking three intelligence, one provost, six medical, one, I'm sorry, the
attached personnel. Now, attached. He might be the padre or somebody.
Yeah. For a total of 15 battalion headquarters. Then in company headquarters, we would have eight signals, two quartermasters for a total of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And the total company and battalion would be 25 under Major J. Love.
Right.
Now,
he's the one that hit the
mines and these are the ones that were decimated, I gather.
Right.
And of all those people going through, they 49 survivors.
Right.
Now, in serial number 1081, LCH.
Landing Craft Headquarters.
Landing Craft Headquarters.
That was our commanding officer.
And that'd be Lieutenant Colonel F. Matheson.
Mm-hmm. And he landed as and when he decided.
I see. And then Landing Craft LCT. Would be Landing Craft Tank, or LCTV, whatever that is.
LCT 5 or V, I can't remember now.
I'm not sure. Anyway, these will come down. A copy, well, if we can get secure a copy of this, I'm sure
right.
It'll be useful to Dr. Roy.
And Lieutenant George Cooper,
mm-hmm.
who now lives in Gibson's.
There's another Captain Brown, I gather he'd be reserves, is that correct? Captain
D.G. Brown. He was with, he eventually became battalion commander.
Hmm.
Cordy Brown. I can't remember this one, Sergeant Reed. There was two in this particular craft.
Mm-hmm.
Signalers. They'd possibly be attached to artillery or another unit entirely.
The thing is that your stuff comes, the people you're after are who on this list, sir?
Yeah, this is where all my company headquarters, all my headquarters personnel were located.
I see, so this would tell you what ships they were in, where
yes.
they were going to be, and who under whose command,
right.
and what section.
Mm-hmm.
So this is headquarters company, so you would have, like your headquarters people, you had six outside of your control running around.
Right.
You had hundreds of signalers, obviously.
Yeah, got it all over.
You had quite a few quartermasters. You had four coming in on LSI J-17.
Yeah, they would be stormen or may have been cooks.
I see. And then, I think this the sheet should
give you an idea anyway of
some of the details. I could borrow it, or if you could make a couple copies for me, I think we could include it, and it'd be great help.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when does your stuff come in? I guess that's the thing. We're talking what, afternoon? Or you said you went into Corsul. I guess this is what I'm having trouble trying to figure out time wise. What's the
Well, for instance, this serial here, Captain Brown, when he came in on a landing craft tank, which is quite a large vehicle. And that's H plus 135 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be around, I guess he came in around noontime. I don't know whether he was on time or not.
Yeah.
But, that was the scheduled landing.
Well, so you would what? Now, while you're waiting for him, did you go into town first to see what was happening and then come
back?
No,
I did not before this, because I stayed on until he came in, because there was a gap after he came in before anyone else was.
Now, would you leave him in command while you went into town? Or
no,
what was it?
No, he had his own little job. I just met him on the beach. And he was standing on top of the ramp, you know, it was going to be lowered.
Yes.
As they were coming in, I could see they were heading right for one of these hedgehogs with a mine on it, which caught the corner of the craft on the front of the thing. But the craft was big enough that it didn't stop it.
Is
but it scared hell out of them.
what, they hit a mine on the way in,
yeah.
Right on the corner. Whoa.
But it didn't stop them from continuing on. They actually grounded a little earlier than they would have wanted to, but the ramp came down anyway. It didn't damage the ramp that badly.
Hmm.
So the ramp was able to drop, and then they came off with their vehicles.
Now, this is where you had your vehicles. Now, what kind of vehicles did you have? Remember numbers and things like that?
I haven't got a detail of that now. The first vehicles that came in were nearly all track vehicles, plus jeeps, there was a few jeeps. And incidentally, going back a little bit, part
mm-hmm.
of our pre-invasion training was learning how to waterproof these vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
They all had to be waterproof so they could drive off of the ramps, submerge, and carry in with their snorkels sitting above the water, hopefully. And as soon as they got in, of course, then they had to be de-waterproofed. And in the case of the larger tanks, they had automatic demolition charges around them that blew off the flotation devices and
mm-hmm.
Their snorkels. Because some of those were only about water level if they didn't have a flotation device around them. They were totally submerged almost, but they were just buoyed up by these flotation devices.
Well, now, your track vehicles and things come jumping through now. What, you would organize verify
the location of their particular companies. Okay, they're now in Rivieres or wherever they happen to be.
So you're running. So you had signalers,
yeah.
I gather, keeping you well informed, and you in turn directing.
Right.
Now, what I'm trying to get at is, when did you go into Corsules? Because you said you went in and met Colonel Matheson in Corsules during that day.
Well, that would be during the morning, because it was only a short distance in, and.
So you popped in the morning before
yeah.
before he came then. What was it like in Corsules then, as you said?
There were still a few civilians around there, and they were sort of wondering about, a bit dazed.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing one woman sitting on the side of a curb, and she'd had a little hole in the side of her leg, and she was pleading with everyone that went by where she could get some medical attention. She had a little kitty with her, too. But we couldn't really help her at that point. I don't think we had any regimental aid posts set up at
mm-hmm.
that point.
And you just, you see, when I read about it, it appears that you just sort of like walked in. And, I mean, after heavy resistance, initial resistance, then you just walked in and mopped up and,
yes.
and continued on. What did Colonel Matheson have to say to you, I guess?
Well, he just wanted to know if everything was coming in all right on the beach, if there's any
mm-hmm.
problems. Because once he got in, he didn't stay on the beach. He went right
he
in.
He went straight in.
Down to set up his headquarters and get in touch with the companies that had already landed ahead of him.
Then you went back to the beach, waited for Brown and these others to show
mm-hmm.
with the vehicles. Now, you had established exits, I suppose, on the beach,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, what's the procedure for establishing an exit?
Most of them were, I think, marked beach exit. There was a proper beach organization set up to handle casualties on the beach,
mm-hmm.
beach dressing stations. They were pretty well easily identified as soon as they came in. You could see the vehicles heading towards
mm-hmm.
these exits inland over the little railway or over the ditch. And of course, once they get on the other side there, I do remember seeing one of the flail tanks. You've heard of the flail tanks?
Mm-hmm.
For going through a minefield with these,
mm-hmm.
like a crocodile, great big drum on the front of it with big chains on it, and it was
mm-hmm.
flapping these chains.
Flailing away.
It was flailing away going through this minefield, and it was exploding the tanks as it went through. And of course, once it went through, anybody else could follow along and go through the break that it made.
Through the break that it made through the minefield.
Yeah.
I was thinking, was there any concern about trying to get rid of or trying to negate these the mines for the ships coming in afterwards, after you secured the beach?
Not until the tide went out.
You're just going to wait till the tug went out, yeah.
And then there are beach crews doing that.
And when you have a demolition crew, I guess, mm-hmm. that would do that,
yeah.
As a matter of course.
Clearing all up.
Now, once your stuff came and went inland, then I guess you had to move to company headquarters, is that correct?
No, I kept my headquarters right on the beach.
So you kept your headquarters on the beach and left Colonel Matheson and the rest...
They went on...
...to battalion headquarters.
Right. Yeah, they followed up and went through the whole plan of the battalion.
Well, how long did you stay on the beach, I guess, is the next?
I stayed on for the first two nights.
There was enough stuff coming through for the Reginas?
Oh, yes. And also finding out where they were setting, how they were getting their ammunition dumps set up,
mm-hmm.
petrol dumps, ration dumps, and so on, so that when the quartermaster started to gather these things, I think we carried 48 hours of rations when we went in, so that everyone was self-sufficient for the first 48 hours. Compo rations, you know,
mm-hmm.
tins. Bully beef and what have you.
How were they? Any good? Or they did?
They did, yes. And the only thing that really disturbed me going in was seeing the animals. First thing I saw was a poor old cow in a field just on the edge of the town, which had been wounded and was helpless, couldn't move. And I didn't know what to do about the thing. I guess everybody else looked at it and thought, oh, well, it's too bad. Until it's finally a tank came up, and the chap on top of the tank with a mounted gun there finally put it out of its misery. But those are the things that bothered me more than anything else, I think, in looking back on it, was the effect it had on certain animals, particularly later in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I could, you know, you feel sorry to see a wounded man or human being there, but you don't feel quite, at least I don't feel quite so sorry for them, because they're there of their own free will, and...
They got themselves into
themselves
it, I guess,
it, yeah,
it is,
I did feel sorry for the condition of some of the animals that we saw.
How did you feel about the successes made? Here you are on the beach, so you're sort of cut off, but you're getting all this information coming in because you are company headquarters. At noon, the Reginas push off to Riviere. At 5 p.m., they're advanced southward from Riviere. I mean, they've captured Riviere,
right.
5 by 5 in the afternoon. And at 8 o'clock that evening, both Fontaine Henry and Lefresque Camille, or Camille,
right.
I guess you would pronounce it,
C-A-M-I-L-L-Y, I really didn't
were in Regina hands.
Mm-hmm. They sort of camped there overnight.
Yes, and then they were relieved, and then they gave it to the, taken over by the Canadian Scottish later.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're talking the night of 6-7 June. And according to Colonel Stacy's book here on the map, page 114, map number 2, the Reginas have really pushed right in, as well as the Canadian Scottish Regiment,
yes.
And the Royal Winnipeg Rifles. Now, was there... Well, the North Shores got in there as well, didn't they?
Yes, they were running into more difficulty, though. They didn't get inland as nearly as far...
Well, how was the organization on the beach now? I'm sure you had a counterpart for every other regiment that was on the beach. Or did you?
Yes, they would all have their...
I'm just wondering if you could look down the beach and see what was, if they were running into any problems, or was there any cooperation, or was there no need at this time?
No, the beach was really a confusing place because there were so many other units coming in, service units, Army Service Corps, vehicle
mm-hmm.
maintenance people, supplies.
All you wanted to do was keep blasting them inward, inland,
right.
I guess.
And that was the reason for our initial orders to get inland as far as possible, particularly to this intermediate.
Mm-hmm.
So and so that the areas that had been marked out for dumps of supplies could be set up.
Well, your targets were, first of all, Kursul, Sumer,
mm-hmm.
then over to Riviere,
right.
And then, if possible,
then
to
that rough line
Camille.
There. Mm-hmm.
LaFrance Camille, or LaFrance Camille, whatever it's called, which was the line established by the 7th and 8th, or I should say
right.
the 7th and 9th Infantry Brigades, 8th Brigade, I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
9th Reserve.
So those objectives were taken on the first day, and that gave the follow-up troops room to maneuver and to bring in their supplies and start building up. And the morning then of the 7th, the battalion moved forward and then crossed the line of the road from Caen to Bayeux.
So the line that's represented on map 2, page 114, Colonel Stacy's victory campaign, the dotted line, is best of your ability from your reports and what you recall is exactly where they were.
Just about the same, yes.
Okay. You must have felt great success on the beach then. Is that correct that you had pushed so far?
Yes, we did, because once we got in past Cursillo's, seemed to be a lot quieter. Just open country, and there was very little evidence of an enemy there.
Now, you say you stayed on the beach until, what, the 8th?
The afternoon of the 8th.
Okay, well, we skipped the 7th here. Let me see. Because the final objective on the 7th of June, noon, on 7 June, the Reginas were in Brettville.
Right.
Or Galicia, or whatever it's pronounced.
Right.
And that can be found on map, page 127 in Colonel Stacy's book. But on the 8th, you had a humdinger. You had the counterattack by the 26th SS Panzer Grenadiers Regiment with Panther tanks. And you were to hold your present position. And two planned attacks were canceled. Now, I guess you were aware of the attacks coming up. Is that correct?
I wasn't myself, no. I was possibly at battalion headquarters level.
I see. But you had, there were two plans, I guess what I'm getting at is that Colonel Stacy mentioned that two planned attacks by the Reginas were canceled for reasons. And then they were told to hold their present position, and then they were counterattacked by the 26th SS Panzer.
When Charlie Company got up to Narian Basin, which was their...
Yeah, they got sort of separated, didn't they?
Yes. They crossed the road and got into Narian Basin. And battalion headquarters then moved up into Brettville and established their headquarters there.
So Brettville was going to be the battalion leading, headquarters.
It was the leading position on the Canadian front at that time.
Yes. There's a small sketch number 7, page 127 of Colonel Stacy's book, Victory Campaign. And we see Norrie and Basin, is where Charlie Company was, is that correct?
Right.
And then Brettville, Orgelise, wherever.
It's where one company, I think it was Able Company, and the battalion headquarters. The
battalion headquarters is there. Well, according to Stacy here, companies A, B, and C there was no of the Winnipegs were encircled at this time and there was no tank support available and there was a number of on the 8th and the 9th of June the Winnipegs get a terrific beating, and the Canadian Scottish get one as well.
Right.
And I guess what I'm leading to on this business on the Winnipegs is that there was claims later made and substantiated that the SS killed 45 Winnipeg prisoners.
We heard of that. I don't know.
Do you recall if you heard about it at the time or whether it was later?
No, within a day or so, I think, or within a few days later, we heard rumors of this.
And the rumors got out, were they believed?
I think there's a lot of people believe them.
Well, how'd you feel about it? Do you recall it yourself?
Oh, I don't think anybody was too happy about it. It just intensified our desire to get on with the war, I would say. Yeah.
There was no retribution with your own prisoners at all, of course.
Oh, no. No, I don't recall anything like that.
You just kept sending them back to the beach here. Okay, on the 8th, the night of the 8th, the morning of the 9th, the Reginas are in fierce fighting in Brettville with one company forward, that'd be Charlie Company,
right.
Forward in Norian Basin, south of the railway.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two Panthers overrun battalion headquarters at Brettville, but were luckily halted by anti-tank bombs. Now, you yourself were in Brettville at headquarters,
right.
Battalion headquarters, and I guess the thing to do here is that if you would tell me when you left the beach in the middle on midday June 8, what happened from that point on, if that's possible.
Yeah. I got up to the battalion headquarters, I guess, in the afternoon of the 8th, and it had been quiet there for the previous 24 hours. There had been very little activity, and things had been getting a little touchy down on the beach because there was a lot of activity, and of course, more troops coming in. It was getting crowded.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting attention from aircraft at night and so on. So I thought, I'll get up to the unit now. There's nothing further I could do on the beach. And I got up to our battalion headquarters, and I moved into the courtyard there, right at the junction of the road from Conta Bayou and the road from the beach up to the thing, which is a poor thing to do. The road junction is not a good place to
set up
headquarters. But however, some of the vehicles were already in there, including the quartermaster, who has moved, put his vehicles in there. And I moved in with them, and had really very little time to look around except to go down and see where battalion headquarters was and report in and get back. And nighttime, I know it got dark, but I have no idea what time it was when the attack came in from the tanks coming in. We'd hear the tanks rumbling first, and then
there was something up.
Yeah, there was something up. And firing, of course, they were firing into us all the time. And I just took shelter in my little company headquarters group. And my sergeant major went down to battalion headquarters during the shelling to see them down there. And while he was down there, apparently some shells started to land in, and he and another very popular young officer of our battalion were in the same slit trench taking shelter from the shelling, and they were both hit by the same shell, and the other young officer was killed, and my company sergeant major was badly wounded and later died. And I didn't know about this until later on that night. And as I say, the shelling got worse, and then around, I imagine it was around about midnight, reading back in our own battalion history, about midnight we heard these tanks rolling along the street from Caen, and we had a 6-pounder gun mounted in the, looking up the road and pointing the wrong way. towards Norian Basin.
Which is where your C company
where
was.
Where our C company was, but there's a road running down towards them, and this particular 6-pounder was pointing down that road out of one of the areas in our little courtyard. But when the tanks were coming in, I grabbed hold of the sergeant of the 6-pounder gun, and we went out to the road to see where the tanks were coming in. No, not right at this time, because before they reached us, we heard a terrific explosion down near headquarters, battalion headquarters, and we saw a great big sheet of flame go up in the skies, and I thought, good God, what's happened down there? And they continued to burn, so the sergeant and I went out to the road and looked up the road to see what had happened, and the first thing I saw was that tank of which the picture shows in the history.
Of the Virginia.
Yes, and the tank was on fire, and I saw a crewman crawling up the lid of the tank to get away, and he was shot, though, just after he got down to ground by somebody in battalion headquarters. And, of course, I guess I looked a little too long, and I was watching this thing burning up, wondering what was going to happen.
Now, this would be the tank, the two Panthers that got through to battalion headquarters.
This is one of the two.
Now, this is down the street from here.
Down the street, about 200 yards.
No, but you were right on the corner.
We were right at the corner, right outside the church.
Right outside the church in Brentville.
Mm-hmm.
With the road facing
Norrie
Besson.
No, I was facing down the road now towards Caen.
Towards Caen.
Mm-hmm.
And the other road, Grouch Road, was down to
Norrie and Besson.
Norrie and Besson, where C Company was.
Right.
Now you see, you're watching this tank burn up at the other end, wondering what it's doing, and...
And I guess it must have been my lucky day, because it was a tracer bullet. And if it hadn't been a tracer, I wouldn't be here now. But fortunately, it was a tracer bullet. And I just had enough warning to see this tracer bullet coming. I pulled my head back behind the stone fence around which I was looking. And the bullet clipped the corner of the stone that I was looking around. And at the time, I thought it had caught me here. But that's mark there is what was...
So it cut you on the side of the face.
Cut me on the side of the face, and just like somebody hit me with a gloved mitt, really.
It had packed quite a punch then.
Yes.
If it was a piece of stone, or was it?
Well, I thought it was a stone first, and then bled like hell. But I was feeling all right, and then the sergeant was with me. He was watching, too. He put my dressing on it, and we went back into our courtyard and sat it out while I continued shelling that end of the thing. But I didn't know there was this other tank further down. It was the second tank that was coming in that fired the shot at me. And, I, of course, I didn't see it in the dark. I was just sort of, it was behind the
flames of the first, too.
Yeah. So I felt very lucky that, I got a little nick there, it wasn't serious.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have the piece of the jacket that came out about 6 months later. I carried a piece of the bullet in my cheek for about 6 months.
So it was the actual bullet itself?
The jacket off of it.
Off the jacket? Off of it. Oh.
Copper jacket.
Mm-hmm. So you came out, so you went back into the courtyard. Now we're still talking, we're on midnight, I guess, the 8th, 9th. There was a number of, you end up, the Reginas hold off the attack, and it's beyond me how they could do it, but they held off the attack because they had no tank support. And five or six, just they're not sure on the numbers here, Panthers were knocked off by Piat bomb, P-I-A-T?
Yes.
And a six-pounder. And now, did you get your six-pounder in action? Or what?
No, we didn't have to bother about that, too, because there was no further advance of the tank into the town. They just sat back and they just shelled us from then on. They didn't try to bring their tanks up. The first tank that came through, I found out later on, had been coming down the road from Caen towards our position, and as it was passing battalion headquarters, my first report was that the batman, the CO's batman, had let fly at the tank with his Piat gun, which is a... have you seen a Piat bomb?
No, I haven't personally, no.
It's... I don't know how to describe it. It's about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, and the nose of it is about 2 or 3 inches long, if I remember correctly. And the theory was that as soon as the nose of that bomb hit an armored vehicle, the concentration of the explosive force at that point actually burned a hole through the armor, and the force of the explosion went in through this hole. It may be only about a half an inch in diameter, but it would actually
be the concussion as well,
and the flame, the fire.
Flame.
Mm-hmm. So it was quite an effective one, as long as it could pierce the army up to, I don't know whether it was a half inch or whatever it was. But
so
he must have hit the tank, and didn't actually knock it out at that time, because the tank stopped, and then I gather it was slewing around either to go back to Caen or go into where the battalion headquarters was. And I think in slewing around as it did, it backed up over a string of 75 necklaces, a necklace of 75 anti-tank bombs that had been stacked against the edge of the building right off the battalion headquarters. And they had been stacked there because we were expecting one of our own tanks to come in that road.